We met at Oklahoma Christian University. We were married in my senior year of college. And so I have a bachelor's in Bible and a master's in business. And Chelsea has a bachelor's of communications from Sam Houston State. And so we've been here and we've been loving it. And if you weren't with us on Wednesday nights, just finished a quarter teaching there. And one of the things that you'll find out is that whenever I study a topic, I ask a lot of questions of myself. So, if you attended on Wednesday night, you know what that means and what that looks like to a class on Sunday morning. And so whenever I consider a topic, and this one is epic failures in the Bible, when I study a topic, I ask a lot of questions of myself. And what that turns into is asking a lot of questions of you. And the intent here is to get us to examine our lives. The intent here is to get us to look at what ourselves in the mirror, face to face, when nobody else is around, and to really think about what our life is like. And are there any things in our lives that we need to change? So a while back, a gentleman by the name of Nathan Ingram was teaching a class in the auditorium, and he taught a class on fear. And it was during that class that I realized that I had a fear of failure. And that I'm not interested in being known as a failure. I'm not interested in being a failure. So began a journey for me of studying failure. And what I hope to do is to share what I've learned so that we can be more encouraged and be more hopeful. All right, so when we think about failure, when we think about hope, what are some things that come to mind as we consider the concept and idea of failure? What are some things that you all think about with failure? And this is the interactive part.
Embarrassment.
Okay. So how does failure and embarrassment relate to one another for you? Just a fear? Okay. Yep. And how often is everything just right? It's hard, isn't it? Excellent. What are some others? Yes.
Well, failure to me is a subjective thing, and usually the problem is unrealistic goals. Like you take a competitive sports team, they want to win every game. But trust me, that's not a possibility.
Okay, excellent. Yes, in the back. Fantastic. So, and we'll get to you in just a moment. So the intent of the class today is to look at folks that experienced and endured failure and look at what they learned and then look at how they're remembered. All right? Yes. Excellent. So there's a lot of this that's subjective, and a lot of it has outward pressures.
The very leaders of our country that we're supposed to respect could be considered failures.
All right, so when we look at failure, one of the ways that failure has been defined by people is being unsuccessful. All right, and as was brought up over here earlier, that can be very subjective. All right, how, let's see. What about not making the grade? What's the letter for not making the grade in school? F. In my mind, for failure, right? So not making the grade, maybe substandard. Has anybody ever seen a piece of equipment fail because of substandard parts? Yeah. You know, it's amazing all the technologies that go into different things that work and function. And something as small as a push button can have things that springs and all types of stuff, and they can fail and cause interesting events. All right. What about a constant string of mistakes? A constant string of mistakes. Maybe. All right, mistakes in whose eyes? We'll talk about that later. Is it a lifetime of letdowns? Maybe. Can failures occur only once? No. All right. I like it. All right. We're about to play a game called Success or Failure. Yes, sir. Exactly. I'm glad you brought up Thomas Edison. Brilliant, brilliant person, but had thousands of failures, and yet he considered it one step closer in eliminating those. Yes. So Abraham Lincoln would be most notable. Absolutely. All right, so this, and I've heard a lot about perception. And so this game we're going to play, I'm going to need your help, all right? And this may help with some of the generation gaps, all right, that are in the audience. But we're going to play a game called Success or Failure. And I'm going to list off an item, and I want to hear from you if it's a success or a failure. The Model T.
Success.
All right, see, y'all got it. All right, how about this one? The Edsel. Oh, man, lots of laughs, failure. Okay. All right, how about the Taurus? Success. All right, so maybe the latest iteration isn't as successful as the one in the 90s and late 80s, but Taurus is a success. How about Pinto? Oh, all right, so here's one that may be perception, okay? So this one is a case study that a lot of folks look at. So ultimately, depending on how you look at it, it sold a lot of cars, but Ford hurt a lot of people with that vehicle and had lots of lawsuits. So, all right, see, I like the way you think. Okay. All right, another example, Mustang.
Success.
Okay, so those are all Ford products, right? How would we describe Ford as a company?
Successful.
We're going to come back to them in just a moment. All right, I'm going to list these other ones. Oldsmobile. Mercury. Pontiac. All right, so I heard up here very quietly, success, success, success. All right, but how many of them are in existence now? None. So at one time, very formidable brands, right? Very relied upon, looked upon in a positive way. Uh-oh. They hear some. Okay.
Well,
Okay, fulfilled it. Out. All right. So here in a little bit, we're going to get into Genesis chapter 15. But before we do that, some of success and failure depends on your viewpoint or your perspective. All right? So for folks in my generation or coming out, right, they may not have ever heard of some of the brands that I mentioned that are no longer serving, right, no longer being sold. By and large, Ford, as y'all mentioned, is a successful brand. In fact, they weren't bailed out because of tough decisions that they made at a specific time in history. All right, so before the economy cratered, Ford started making some very deliberate decisions about their long-term success and viability as a company. They sold brands like Jaguar. They sold brands like Land Rover. They sold facilities, and they restructured debt. And at the time, everybody was looking at Ford as they're failing. They're about to go out of business. This is a last stretch. I can't believe that they're doing all this. And guess what? When the economy cratered, Ford skyrocketed, right? They didn't accept, or at least in the same terms, the bailouts while GM and Chrysler were struggling, eventually succumbing to partial government ownership. So what I want to do here is to paint that sometimes society dictates what's a success, and they're not always right, and they're not always accurate. And depending on where you are in your life and your life's perspective, when you look at things, an event may look like a failure, an event may look like a success. But one of the great things about our life is that we can mess up, we can admit our wrongs, we can suffer the consequences, we can move on, and it can be a portion of our story, but not the entire story. I believe that sometimes we forget that idea and we let these moments define us, or we allow others to define us. The purpose of our studying epic failures of the Bible is to examine heroes, all heroes, folks that we've grown up reading and learning about, and seeing their humanness, to learn from their humanness, and be reminded that God used them. That God used them. And not only did he use them, he used them in spectacular ways, but that we also look up to them today. And we admire them, and we admire their faith. So our first example that I would like us to do is Abraham and Sarah. So I asked you to go ahead and turn in your Bibles to Genesis chapter 15. What are Abraham and Sarah famous for? All right, so we got a couple of different examples. One is that Abraham, when he traveled, specifically in Egypt, hey, you're my brother. All right, I'm sorry. All right, old of age, and we're able to have a child. What else do we know about Abraham and Sarah? She laughed. Absolutely. Right, she overheard the conversation and laughed. Wow. Okay. I'm sorry?
Decided to help God in his plan.
All right. Thank you. So, yes. Absolutely. So perspective and self-reflection, thinking about what would I really do? And that's great because that's what I want us to do as we study. Yes. All right. How's that? All right. So especially during that time period. But you know what? Even that faces folks today, right? Where folks may treat your family differently. It happens. That was something that Chelsea and I experienced, is that folks treated us differently right? We have an adopted child and we have a biological child. And the reality is what they experienced is it's sad. And for some folks to not be able to do that, that's very difficult. All right, so we're going to read Genesis chapter 15, and we're going to read verses 1 through 6. After this, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision. Do not be afraid, Abram. I'm your shield, your very great reward. But Abram said, O sovereign Lord, what can you give me since I remain childless? And the one who will inherit my estate is Eliezer of Damascus. And Abram said, you have given me no children, so a servant in my household will be my heir. Then the word of the Lord came to him, this man will not be your heir, but a son coming from your own body will be your heir. He took him outside and said, look up at the heavens and count the stars, if indeed you can count them. Then he said to him, so shall your offspring be. And Abraham believed the Lord and credited it to him as righteousness. All right. So here we have the example that was pointed out is perception of Abraham and his family could have been that of failure because they had no children. All right. Why was it so important in that time period, especially, to have children? Carry on the name, have an heir. All right. What would happen if Abraham died and Sarah was left as a widow? All right. No one to take care of her, not a husband and not children. Okay.
If her parents were still alive, they would, but maybe. But chances are she would be one to be a beggar or worse.
Okay. So pretty important for them to have a child. What did God promise Abram? Promised him heirs, children, how many? A lot. Numerous as the stars. You ever stop, even nowadays, and look out at the sky? Can you imagine hearing God stop and talk to Abram and looking up at the skies? And not our smog-clouded, overcast, we're in the city lights stars, but stars out in the country. How amazing is that? Yes, sir.
For perspective, in our own galaxy, there are hundreds of millions of stars, and many of those things we see out there are galaxies themselves.
All right. Just unimaginable, right? The sheer volume. Okay. So we have that noted in our minds, right, that Abram was promised children by God. And what takes place? Do they have children right away? No. Okay, so let's skip forward to Genesis chapter 16. Now Sarah, I can never say their original names quite right, but now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children. But she had an Egyptian maidservant named Hagar. So she said to Abram, the Lord has kept me from having children. Go sleep with my maidservant. Perhaps I can build a family through her. Abram agreed to what Sarah said. So after Abram had been living in Egypt 10 years, Sarai, his wife, took her Egyptian maidservant Hagar and gave her to her husband to be his wife. He slept with Hagar and she conceived. When she knew she was pregnant, she began to despise her mistress. Then Sarai said to Abram, you're responsible for the wrong I'm suffering. I put my servant in your arms, and now she knows she is pregnant. She despises me. May the Lord judge between you and me. And finishing up with verse 6, your servant is in your hands, Abram said. Do with her whatever you think best. Then Sarai mistreated Hagar, so she fled from her. All right. So on our successometer, failure meter, where are we right now?
Failure.
Okay, so we have this issue, right? What took place? God made a promise to Abram, right? And what took place in their household? They had no children, right? How do you think that made them feel? Okay. So I was reading and studying about this particular story, and there's a gentleman by the name of Stephen Miller that has written some books that he tries to cater these books to people that aren't Christians to just get them to crack open the Bible. And so he's got this book that we have, and it's called How to Get Into the Bible or something like that. And he's got little snippets on each historical thing or each person, just real brief, maybe a paragraph, six sentences. And in this particular one, he mentioned that some historical evidence suggests being close to the modern-day country of Iraq, and historically the code of Hammurabi about what is lawful concerning men and women, and that historically, if they were influenced by that, then this would have been right in line with their customs and their laws at the time, and that if Hagar had delivered this child, well, we know she did, but anyways, that child would be adopted, completely accepted as Abram's son. So just one caveat there. So we mentioned impatience. How many of us know anything about God's timing? He's got his own timeline. How many of you have ever been impatient before? Right? We've all been impatient before. Good grief. We're a society of patientless people, aren't we? How soon do we want to be served? Right now. How long do you want to wait if you're at a restaurant for a waiter to come to your table? You don't want to wait, right? Okay. How long do you want to wait before you see a doctor? Now, depending on the procedure, maybe a long time, but how long do you want to wait? Right? We want it now, and we can look back at this and see a sense of impatience, right? And how often do we do that in our own lives? How many of you have... Yes? Excellent point. Okay. No, we don't. And we don't see where Abram references, hey, God promised me that we'll have children. Sure.
And so, as you said, if the Hammurabi code is what they were using, the fact that he had handmaiden and Sarah said, yeah, this is your new wife, take her as one of your own, he's like, okay, whatever. Maybe this is what God wanted.
Okay.
Now, he didn't say that initially, he didn't say that Sarah would bear with you. He said that I wouldn't have many descendants.
Okay. I believe, okay. One in the back. All right. Thank you, Glenn. So what we find out that took place here is we don't really all fully understand the rationale, but for somebody that's been childless your whole life, this is hard. And so we see that they used Hagar, and that created a very difficult, to say the least, relationship. Starting in verse 7, this is after Sarah mistreats Hagar and she flees. The angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in the desert, It was a spring that's beside the road to Shur. And he said, Hagar, servant of Sarai, where have you come from and where are you going? I'm running away from my mistress, Sarai, she answered. The angel of the Lord told her, go back to your mistress and submit to her. The angel added, I will so increase your descendants that they will be too numerous to count. The angel of the Lord also said to her, you're now a child, and you will have a son, and you shall name him Ishmael, for the Lord has heard of your misery. He'll be a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone, and everyone's hand against him. And he will live in hostility toward all his brothers. She gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her. You're the God who sees me, for she said, I have now seen the one who sees me. And that's why they named the well what they did. So they used the maidservant to help provide an heir, and almost immediately jealousy took place. Sarah despised Hagar and mistreated her. And later, after Ishmael is born, right, they send Hagar and Ishmael off. Now, suppose their life ended there. Suppose that was the end of the story. What would we have missed if that's the way the story ended? What would we miss? Yes, sir.
We would miss that God accomplishes what he promises in his own time.
All right. Excellent. Any others? Does that pretty much sum it up well for all of us? Man, we would have missed out on them conceiving Isaac. We would have missed out on that. We would have missed out on the story of Abraham taking Isaac to the altar. Oh my. Okay. All right. So we would have missed the story of Abraham's faith from there on. In Genesis chapter 2, we find out, or 22, we find out that Abraham was willing to do the sacrifice to Isaac because of his faith in God. Now, I do want to make a pause and a note here. There is a holiday in October that is not celebrated by Christians called Eid al-Adha. Anybody know what that is? I probably butchered that because I have not studied Arabic. It's an Islamic holiday. And that holiday is a holiday that celebrates Abraham taking Ishmael to the altar to be sacrificed. Not Isaac. And when we read about hostility toward all their brothers, you know, I didn't know that that existed until I saw it on a calendar that I have at work in October. And so I looked up, well, hey, what is this day all about? And I was like, oh my, you know, I never knew that.
You know, the whole essence of the Quran is that Ishmael is the father of God's people. So the Quran is really the devil's counterfeit for God's
life. So what I want to point out and why I'm stopping here, just for this brief pause, is that sometimes we help out in what we think is best, but we still have consequences that surround all of our actions. And while ultimately there's this a tremendous story, right, of faith and faithfulness and depending and relying on God so much to the point that someone would sacrifice their son, that there are still long lived out consequences that we can see here, a clear difference between the way that we read what took place in Genesis and the way that others read that they have taken to take place. So there's a very serious difference here, and there's very serious consequences to the actions that were taken. So I want you to think in your life, all right? Where is some place where we've messed up and we suffered consequences? Anybody think about that? So I have one not very serious consequence was my friend and I, when we were growing up, we liked to make bamboo bows and arrows. We thought that was pretty cool. There's a bamboo field that we could go to, and we would cut our own bamboo. And we'd been cutting and cutting and cutting, and guess what? I was making my nice tip on my arrow, and I cut nearly part of my thumb off, right? So unintended consequence of me trying to have a good time as a little boy, very, very small illustration, that hurt. And as much as I didn't want it to happen, it still happened, and I had to learn from it, especially about how cutting, right? How to cut. So now you can ask a bunch of other questions about where was my supervision, et cetera, et cetera. But I had to learn from that event about how to cut. And even though I was cutting away from myself, right, my thumb was still in the what folks call the line of fire. And so I still hit my thumb. So I learned from that event. All right. What do we see that Abraham has learned from God following through on his promise with Isaac? What do we see? What did he learn? All right. So we can turn over, right, to Genesis chapter 22. And we could read verses 1 through 19. And we can see how Abraham walks all the way up. Hey, Dad, where's the sacrifice? And what is the response? Right? He's going to provide. But where's the lamb for the burnt offering? Abraham answered, God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son. And the two of them went on together. And so he reaches out in verse 10, his hand, and took the knife to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord called out to him from heaven, Abraham, Abraham, here I am, he replied. Do not lay a hand on the boy. Do not do anything to him. Now I know that you fear God because you have not withheld from me your son, your only son. And so here, right, he's going to do the unthinkable in our minds. And he stopped. Abraham looked up, and there in the thicket he saw a ram caught by its thorns. He went over, took the ram, sacrificed it. The angel of the Lord called to Abraham and said, I swear by myself, declares the Lord, that because you've done this and have not withheld your son, your only son, I will surely bless you and make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as the sand on the seashore. We can also fast forward to Hebrews chapter 11, right? What do we know Hebrews chapter 11 as? Great faith, the faith chapter, the definition of faith, the essence of faith, illustrations of faith, right? Starting in verse 11 of chapter 11, by faith Abraham, even though he was past age, and Sarah herself was barren, was enabled to become a father because he considered him faithful who had made the promise. And so from this one man, and he is as good as dead, came descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as countless as the sand on the seashore. All right, and then skip down to verse 17. By faith, Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He who had received the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son, even though God had said to him, it's through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned. Abraham reasoned that God could raise the dead, and figuratively speaking, he did receive Isaac back from death. There's a lot that we can learn, right, from the story of Abraham and Sarah. Why is this important for us to see and to understand when we look at Abraham? Why is it important for us to see and understand?
We need to
trust God. Trust God? Patience? Absolutely. Yeah, I can't imagine what the relationship would have been like following that event.
If all the characters of the Bible had been flawless, then we would really be neurotic. It's good to have these examples that we can
How many have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God? All. Okay? All of us. Do we get that? Do you get the fact that we all mess up? Absolutely. That is very much alive and well, right? How many of us greeted each other with, "I'm doing well today"? Anybody greet each other? Good. How's life? Good. How's family? Good. How's work? Good. Everything's good and great and fine, right? It's not. And we perpetuate that, and I'm guilty of it too. I can't think of how many people I've told that I'm doing okay whenever really I wasn't doing okay. But for whatever reason, maybe I didn't want to talk about it at the time. Maybe I was afraid of perceptions, right? How many of us, we get afraid and we get scared of what people are going to think when they find out we did X? Or they find out that we're not as perfect as we would like to be? It's important for us to read and understand that and to see that God still used them because they were willing to serve Him faithfully, and they were willing to turn the page in their lives. There's only one good teacher, right? How many mistakes have we made? Can anybody count all the mistakes we've made? That's it. That's all I've made, and that was probably this morning, right? How many mistakes have we made? Isn't it awesome that God can and will use humans who strive after Him wholeheartedly? And maybe we make rash decisions or things that don't make sense to everybody else, or we try to help. I think it's good for us to look at things where we know Abraham as a faithful man, don't we? Isn't that how he's remembered? Isn't that how he's talked about? Father Abraham had many sons and many, right? We think highly of him, and we remember and reflect on him. All right, lastly, it doesn't matter who you are or where you are in life. You can and will be used for God's glory if you're following him with faith, if you're willing to repent and earnestly seek after him. That's my admonition to you, that as you live your life, you don't consider yourself or others less because of failures, but that you look at them with an open and transparent heart, and that you're willing to see things as they are, and you're willing to repent, you're willing to faithfully and earnestly seek after him. And always remember, such were some of you. Thank you.